Welcome to Tez Talks Radio. I'm your host, Marissa True, and today I'm joined by Andre Taranu. He is the Decentralist Product Manager at Homebase, a DAO administration platform, and Trustless Business, which is yet to be launched, but is a platform for users to engage in on-chain economic arrangements and dispute resolution. But before we get deeper into those, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So as is tradition, we start the conversation with understanding a little bit more about you. So can you tell us a bit more about your journey and how you ventured into blockchain and then eventually Tezos?
Sure. So my backstory, I grew up in Romania, all over the place, mostly Bucharest. Graduated journalism, had a career out of college working in television. For about 7 years, I wanted to make a morning show, like be funny on TV, because that's what I saw growing up, and I thought it's kind of great to be able to do that. I, on the side, I had a audio production facility where we did like jingles and commercials and stuff like that, some music, then I had an idea for an app when mobile apps were starting to pop, and which was just like a social calendar where you would mark your free time and people would make suggestions for that free time, and you would accept the suggestion and, you know, spend some offline time with someone. I didn't know how to code, so I couldn't hire anybody, so I learned programming, and I built the app so that I could get into an accelerator, which was great. It was called Rockstarts. And I learned that stuff that I was doing as a founder is very similar to what a product manager does. So after the accelerator, there was a few prospects of continuing that startup, but I wasn't like happy with the amount of validation that I got from the market. So I let that die. And I started working as a product manager, doing both UX design and product strategy, freelancing. And then I had like my first, because I always need to have a side project. I was thinking about what to replace time in with. That was the name of the app. And I was looking at decentralized technology. At the time, there was just Bitcoin, but I noticed that there the same technical architecture involved in validating transactions and the proof of work was also useful in training AI models. So I started looking into that, and it took me a few years to come up with the white paper, which is called AutoNet, which is distributed training and inference. So I gravitated towards the decentralized space, worked with a political company called Majoritas, where they provide like digital products for campaigns, for political campaigns. It was really interesting to learn how things are done there. Worked with a few block producers on EOS. That was one of the first delegated proof of stake networks. And then when pandemic hit, I started this project called firetrace.org, where we had the first, we had the only infection model that would propagate across multiple levels of interaction. So it would actually model how the virus spreads. That got integrated into a few apps, including the official Indian app, who have a few hundred million downloads. And it's all open source. And then I got into Dork and DAOs, managing Homebase. And here we are.
So you actually had a very colorful career. It's interesting that you started in journalism and media, then sort of dabbled in the app development space, and then broadly went into AI, which is interesting because when you talk about the synergies between blockchain or decentralization and AI, I think that's a conversation that's starting to crop up again. So it's almost circling back to your past experience. But, you know, given now a lot of your work and your focus revolves around DAOs, here's where I want to sort of introduce a lot of our audience who may not be as familiar with what DAOs are and how they work. Can you, in your own words, explain what a decentralized autonomous organization is?
Sure. So we all know what an organization is. It's a bunch of people getting together to do something in an organized fashion, right? So there are various ways of managing groups of people working together. And the DAO, I would say, is the most efficient one that we've seen so far, because it allows quick decision making and it is very secure in the sense that nobody can really make claims of rigged elections or stuff like that. So fundamentally, the concept of a democratic organization has been around for a while, and we even see like off-chain collectives being very successful. In Spain, for example, the Mondragon Corporation, which is made by lots of made up of multiple organizations that vote on the decisions that they want to make, which impacts the entirety of the all of the members. So that's not new, but decentralized technology and the blockchain allows this kind of collective to be, like I said, much more efficient, so the decisions can be made much faster. Now, if you compare if you compare on-chain DAOs to any kind of governance method, this comes out on top. So if you compare it with just, you know, yelling yay or nay in a room, or stamping paper ballots, or even, you know, electronic voting, but which is centralized on servers, this is, like I said, much more secure and is very transparent. Everybody can trust that the decisions are reflected in the actual outcome, the decisions of the people.
So can you give me an example of a major successful DAO, and can you sort of dig into how it's structured and what makes a quality DAO?
Sure. So if we just look at Homebase, our platform, which is kind of the only DAO platform on Tezos, what we see is a bunch of collectives gathering around certain value propositions. So we see like collectors of NFTs, lots of them. I would say this is the most prevalent use case. We also see we have a naming service like Tezos Domains. They also released like a governance token, and then the owners of the people who have that in their balance can in their wallet can vote. We see people who are pushing various optimizations of governance. This is not a very spread use case, but there are a few who are actually working on optimizing governance, and then that's their value proposition, and they mint tokens according to the work that they do on that. What else? DeFi protocols, obviously, because they're so close to DAOs, given the nature of their operations. So, I mean, it's obvious for them that they can organize that way. But the use case that we're not seeing is professional DAOs. I am part of one, like the team that is managing Homebase is part of DORG or DORG, which is a service DAO. So we are a collective of builders, of software developers, and we have a treasury, and we vote, we all pay like 10% of what we earn to the treasury, and then we vote on how to spend that surplus. So this is one use case that is not really so prevalent as I think it would deserve to be. And if we look, so that's just Homebase. And then if we zoom out and look at DAOs in general, like you can there are certain aggregators that you can check for that, like DeepDAO, where they actually went around and indexed. They made a list of all DAOs, or most of them, I guess. And the distribution of use cases is reflected in there. So you can see the usual suspects, NFTs, naming services, DeFi protocols. So the same thing. But the biggest ones are still on Ethereum, but the use cases are the same.
Mm-hmm. So if the simplest application is for NFT projects, and then perhaps one of the more sophisticated applications is organizational or service-based, as you were saying, with D.org, what would you say is actually the prime use case for a DAO?
No, this is the prime use case, service DAO. And it's not a matter, it's not that one is more complicated than the other. Like, the actual value propositions that the DAOs are formed around can vary. That doesn't impact the complexity of the governance model itself. Mm-hmm. They're going to vote in the same way. So it's just a matter of deciding how to spend the assets in the treasury. And that's mm-hmm. going to be the same procedure regardless of what the DAO actually does.
Mm-hmm.
I think the prime use case and the one that would be most valuable is for work collectives to organize as DAOs, to have democracy at work, basically.
So almost touching on the slightly political labor union sort of approach to organizing a team. And then are there any cases in which you think DAOs are less or not appropriate?
Well, insofar as organizations that need to govern themselves, I would say that if there's just a very small number of members, you can get away with just a multisig. So not mm-hmm. necessarily needing to mint a token. If you're just, I don't know, five or four, less than 10 people, and you don't need to account for everybody's contribution over time. So you can just set a distribution of power, of weight from the very beginning. And if that doesn't change, then you don't really need to mint a DAO. You can use something like TZSafe on Tezos or GnosisSafe on Ethereum and use that.
And given, I guess, the sustainability of a DAO relies on the continued engagement and participation of its members, what are some of the mechanisms that are in place to continue to incentivize that participation?
Well, it's self-enforcing in a way. Like, again, it depends on the object of their activity. One thing that just recently happened on home basis, we had the DAO that was created 2 years ago, and it was an old version of the contract that we weren't really supporting anymore in the app, and that was deprecated around 2 years ago, and there was a notice period, and everybody was notified that they should transfer their assets to a new contract. That didn't happen, and the members basically forgot about the fact that they had some governance token, and they weren't also worth much. It is a tradable token, but it wasn't worth much, so they forgot about it. But the creator of that collection recently went viral with another collection, which spilled into this, like the virality aspect spilled into this, and the value shot up. So the members again found the incentive to be engaged and to vote and to want to, you know, to care about the tokens that they had staked there. So I would say that the incentives are primarily financial. And I don't think, like, this is a good incentive, you know, money.
Yeah, no, finances have proven to be a powerful incentive through I think, every single bull cycle that we've seen throughout blockchain and Web3.
Too powerful, I would say, because oftentimes people ignore certain things, certain value propositions that make sense from a moral standpoint, but like the immediate financial interest is colliding with that. So
the short-term gain versus the long-term goal, I guess. Are there any specific instances that come to mind instantly when you think of that, I guess, conundrum?
Well, I'm trying to spread the word about the value proposition of DAOs in the context of governance. I mean, migrating the actual territorial administration to a more advanced type of governance that would allow the people to decide not just who to have as a leader, but to decide on the actual decisions that the leader would make. And that's possible for the first time. However, like the short-term incentive is to not talk about that, really. I mean, in this community, I'm not really trying to point fingers at anyone in particular, but just my sense of being involved for the last 2 years very actively is that people are not really trying to disturb the waters so long as cash is coming in, and not trying to upset the regulators by suggesting that they can be replaced. That makes sense.
Okay, so trying not to cause any controversy in sort of usurping the status quo, but still using it as a means of potentially, I guess, generating some quick liquidity that can actually facilitate some of the actions that a DAO might want to take. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And the thing that you have to ignore to be able to operate like this is the critical flaws of the management system that we have in place at the territorial level, where, you know, people are talking about blowing up the world.
So this is where we pointed, I guess, broader global politics and the inadequacies in our current governance systems that allow for terrible decisions to be made.
Yeah, I mean, the product that we offer at Homebase and just DAOs in general is governance. And it's more than just a food delivery app or any other use case, or at least this is how I personally relate to it, because the governance that we do see in the mainstream, although it still, like, our society still functions, but starting to kind of, people are openly talking about the possibility of wars, like nuclear wars, the people who are actually in a position to start those wars. Mm-hmm. So I feel like from that point of view, governance is kind of failing us. Which is why people in my position, I feel, who are aware of an alternative, are kind of have a responsibility to try to spread the word about a better system.
On the basis that Homebase's core value proposition is providing a governance framework and the facilitation and administration of a DAO, how is that governance designed, and how has it come to pass that is the optimal way governance should be run or operated?
Well, it started from somebody just envisioning how these organizations would operate. And then once it actually hit the real world, we optimized based on the needs that we observed in the communities that we support. So I think we are, at this point, we have reached a set of features that would fulfill the needs of most organizations. I'm sure that we can still find ways to optimize, but the one important feature is infinite upgradability. And this is actually also the main feature of Tezos, right? That it can be anything if the stakeholders agree, and if a proposal gets enough votes, then the actual virtual machine that is run on the validators will change, and the way that the network works will change. The same capability is right now present in our Base DAO contract, where the community can, by consensus, adopt any functionality. So they can just code something, a function, and they can make a proposal asking the community, hey, do you want to add this to our portfolio of available actions? And if that proposal passes, then the DAO is upgraded, basically. So from that perspective, it's not really up to us as the maintainers of this platform to figure out the needs of each and every community, because mm-hmm. they can do that for themselves.
Okay, so the governance mechanism on Homebase is also iterative in the same way that Tezos as a layer one is also iterative or self-upgrading and infinitely upgradable, as you said. So in that, what are some of the adaptations that you've seen in recent times that have indicated this evolution?
Well, you mean the actual functions that were implemented by the communities?
Mm-hmm.
There weren't many, fortunately, on Homebase, because Coden Mikkelsen is still something not accessible to lots of people. And like I said, most of the communities are not technically inclined, so they are mm-hmm. art collectors. We've seen but Lambda, this is the name of the function that gets added. So we've seen a Lambda from Crunchy, which is a group of yield farmers, mm-hmm. and they amended their contract with a piece of functionality that allows them to change the way the fee is held from a proposal. Mm-hmm. We are doing one right now. By the end of Q3, it will be out, which is it's quite a popular functionality in EVM, which is called arbitrary contract interaction. So instead of having a proposal for each new piece of functionality, we are making one new function that would allow the users to input the address of any contract, then input the function, and then the parameters, and call that directly, which would still require approval, but you don't need to have this like multi-step process where you first approve the fact that you want to use the function and then you use the function. So, but this will happen once, and mm-hmm. then people who use that functionality will be able to call different contracts with any parameters.
Right. So it's almost like an opt-in feature that they can add should they find it beneficial to them.
Yeah. And I guess for that, the most important use case is interacting with the centralized exchanges, mm-hmm. Where if you want to swap the assets in your treasury, you don't need to withdraw to a centralized wallet and then go to something like Binance or an exchange, centralized exchange, and do that. You can just call the exchange function on a decentralized exchange mm-hmm. contract, and then you don't break the trustless flow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so essentially what Homebase is doing is providing these features to, I guess, make the DAO or the governance process a bit more streamlined and also a little bit more agile in the sorts of decisions and executions that can take place on the basis of those decisions.
Yeah, exactly. And another consideration why we are introducing this is we're developing this other platform called Trustless Business that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to integrate that with Homebase so that communities are able to call the functions on that app through consensus. And for that, we also need this arbitrary contract interaction.
Right. So I know Trustless Business is in the works. I believe the launch is slated around May this year. Is that right still?
So, yeah. Roughly.
The rough date is May. Don't worry. I mean, there's always elasticity built into blockchain launch times. So I think we'll target May and see how it goes. I know based on general research that it's supposed to, quote, redefine the transactional trust architecture and is providing a dispute resolution mechanism. So I'd like to understand more about what that means in practice and how it works.
Yeah, well, we said earlier that one of the best use cases for DAOs is to be service DAOs, like professional organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, like the DAO that I'm a part of, Dorg, is incorporated as a company. Even though we are a DAO, we, in order to be interoperable with our business partners, obviously we need to be incorporated, and there needs to be a contract that is signed and that is actionable in the traditional justice system.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not a necessity anymore in order for the business arrangements to work in tokenized communities. So what we are aiming to do with Trustless Business, by the way, this is the actual URL, and people can go there even now and sign up for better access. So what we do there is whenever someone wants to engage in a business venture, whether it's a client who needs some work done or a professional who wants to work, they can access this platform and they can, you know, decide off chain about the compatibility. But then the actual arrangement is immutably stored, like the terms of the arrangement are immutably stored in the contract, in the smart contract that they spin up for their particular task that they want to do. So because the terms cannot be changed, everybody can, I mean, it can be a private arrangement, but a designated arbiter, or everyone if it's public, can check to see what those people agreed to when they decided to go into business together. And then if either of them throws the project into a dispute, the arbiter gets to decide, based on the evidence presented, if the work was actually done or not, and then decide how to allocate the funds in escrow between the parties that are involved in that business arrangement. And the incentives are such that more often than not, in the majority of cases, this would lead to what the majority of the stakeholders would agree is a fair outcome, because the arbiters are incentivized financially to rule in a way that other people would agree that is fair. Otherwise, they will not be elected as arbiters for future projects. So this is how it works.
And on that basis, it sounds like it would displace, I guess, the typical legal dispute mechanisms that are in place in terms of trying to take one another to court to dispute these sorts of conflicts. But what are some of the domains that, you know, this on-chain dispute resolution you would consider to be most effective? You've kind of shaped the business case between, say, a contractor or like a service provider and their client. But what are some other sort of examples?
Well, the claim that I'm making is it would apply to every kind of business arrangement. However, so not just for services, but also for, you know, transacting goods. But if you just look at how the product is right now, it heavily integrates with GitHub. You need to create a project there, like clone the template, customize it there, and then share the link to the repository in the contract. Obviously, we don't want to store too much on chain because that can get expensive. So it would seem like the people who are involved in software production would be very comfortable using this. That said, the mechanism itself can be applied to anything.
Mm-hmm. And you said previously that there is these ongoing efforts to integrate Trustless Business with Homebase. So how do these platforms sort of complement one another?
Well, right now, the way the if you go on the beta and look at it, you would see that there is one wallet for each type of stakeholder in a project. Like there is one wallet for the author of a project, one wallet for the contractor, each backer, like the people who funded it. Also allows crowdfunding. So each backer can be just one wallet. However, the optimal way to use this is from organization to organization. Like you want a business to contract the services of another business. And for that to happen, you need to have your DAO contract be the actual party. And so then you would need to have a proposal instead of just one user action for the various triggers that you can call on the trustless contract. So you would have within your own DAO, you would make a proposal saying these people delivered. If you are the contract, if you are the client, you would say these people delivered. Let's make a proposal to release the funds. Or if you're the contractor, the person who did the work, you would make a proposal in your own DAO and say, we delivered, but doesn't seem like they are paying. Let's make a proposal to throw the project into dispute. So this would not be just a single user action, but it would be a consensus from the actual organizations. So that's why DAOs need to be integrated with this dispute resolution and business framework.
Right. And are there any sorts of situations in which you would think that it's not appropriate for?
In terms of business arrangements?
Yes, or just more broadly, sort of on-chain dispute resolution. Because lot of what we've discussed is there's typically a financial component, hence like the escrow. So what are sort of other domains in which those practices can be applied, but perhaps not, or perhaps we need to rely on an alternative system?
Well, the traditional justice system is really complex, and it's been shaped over hundreds of years of iteration, and you know, has this whole system with precedents and multi-level appeals and all of that. What we did is a MVP. So yes, at this point, I wouldn't say that everybody can just jump on this and then it'll work. But we are aiming to be fully interoperable first with the legacy, let me not call it legacy, but the traditional justice system, and then take over. So the prime use cases would be the development of and things that have to do with digital products. because the product itself is integrated, like I said, with GitHub, and it has many of the components that software people are very familiar with. And then I guess the ones that are furthest away, shipping raw materials from one country to another, that kind of stuff.
So acknowledging that, you know, we've got a legal system that goes back hundreds of years, are there any sort of key learnings that have been taken from those systems that have been implemented into systems like Trustless Business? Or was this a matter of saying that the digital environment or on-chain dispute resolution needs to look fundamentally different to the systems that have served us, perhaps imperfectly, but for so long?
Well, it's not fundamentally different, except for the substrate on which it happens. Like the decision-making process and the way the jurors come to a decision is very similar. Like you are presented with the facts and you get to debate. You know, if it's ideally a DAO that is the arbiter and not a single person, and then you rule, then the ruling itself is also immutably stored so that it can be associated with the reputation of the arbiter. We can draw a parallel between the history of ruling that a judge makes. So there are many similarities, and the process is fundamentally identical, but the substrate on which it happens is different.
And with that said, taking, I guess, a more forward-looking view, how does a technology or a solution like this evolve? How does it become, I guess, more iterative than, say, our current legal framework is? Because the benefit of being online or digital is that it can upgrade itself and it doesn't ossify into a system of practices that doesn't actually serve us. So how do you sort of take in new learnings and adapt the product accordingly?
Well, you kind of answered the question while asking it, because yes, that's the advantage of having it be a fully digital system. The fact that you can endow it with upgradability from the get-go. And just like the home base, like the base DAO contract can be amended, the same thing is true with the trustless business contract, where the community, which is accounted for by the earnings and spendings that they have on this platform, so that's their weight in terms of deciding how to shape the whole economy. They can make proposals to change various functionalities and pipelines, and then it changes very, very rapidly.
Is there a bit of a trade-off in terms of having a system of rules that can change so readily, just because it might cause a level of disturbance or, in a way, unreliability of what the state of play should be at any given point in time?
I'm not sure. So you're asking about the downside of quick upgradability, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Well, yes, there is a downside. If people rush to implement things that haven't been sufficiently considered.
Mm-hmm. And what's going to control that rate of consideration? Because arguably having a system like our current legal framework, to use that as an example, is that because it is so slow, there is plenty of time for consideration, which doesn't necessarily exist. So you almost have to enforce this time window for this consideration to take place.
Right. But that's not a requirement. That's a problem with the current system, that it can only operate at this speed. I think we want to be able to operate fast and slow based on our confidence, our collective confidence in whatever measure we want to have in place. Now, the way to do that is obviously not through these very disorganized debates and discussions that we have on social media. Because it just feels like everybody's shouting, and at some point, whoever gets to shout or have the most bots or whatever, it seems like they would win the argument. So that's not an ideal way of organizing and debating. However, there are also ways of a discussion that is civilized, and attaching somebody's weight, their voting weight, to whatever argument they want to make would make the people who are consuming, who are watching and listening, reading that argument, pay more attention. And if there is, usually the proposals are binary. Should we do this or should we not do this? And there is one platform that I've really admired for a long time. For some reason, it didn't go mainstream. It's called Kialo. Do you know it?
No.
Okay. So this is it's a platform where for debates, and people have a thesis at the top, like universal basic income should be adopted by and everybody should get cash, and then it spreads into a tree of arguments. People who are making arguments against and in favor. And then from there, each argument is spread into another tree. And then it's a very structured way of looking at all of the points in favor and against something. Now, what I was thinking is if in addition to that, you also have the people log in with their Web3 identity and associate their voting power, this would make it even more efficient, because you would have, if somebody makes a point that you don't agree with, like they are against a proposal that you would like to see passed, but they have a big voting weight because their contribution to the economy was big. So That's rightfully so. And then people wouldn't just pile up and try to, you know, offend the person, or like we see on social media right now, they would legitimately try to convince the other person of their own perspective, and there would be more rational exchanges there. So that's how I see the issue of not rushing decisions.
And so is there a universe in which this is a feature you try to adopt into trustless business, or adapt into a way that trustless business could use effectively?
Yeah, I think it can be a separate platform and just live by itself. Doesn't need to be associated with Homebase or trustless business. And it would be great if somebody else would do it also, because, you know, kind of
have the work.
Yeah.
And with that, my final question to you is, you know, what's next on the horizon? What else are you working on in the run-up to Trustless Business's launch?
Well, I was saying that the prime use case for DAOs are service DAOs, labor unions. I think you said labor unions. But if we had this conversation like 5 years ago, it would be great. Right now, there is a very noticeable trend in just the working class losing their economic relevance. So that might not matter much if we do implement a way where people can make decisions based on their contribution to the collective wealth. However, human labor is kind of losing value because of the thing that is rising right now. And my I have an urgent sense of like a sense of urgency about implementing or making a proposal for a protocol upgrade on Tezos. I think Tezos is in a great position to implement distributed inference and training so that people can become the stakeholders of an AI economy, and the revenue generated by AI can be distributed to the people who invest in their training. So that's something that I'm very much trying to do.
Yeah, I think the interplay between blockchains and AI is going to get more and more interesting, because I think it's one where there's a lot of natural synergies for how one technology can complement the other, and how that actually plays out in practice is going to be very, very interesting. Andre, thank you so much for your perspectives. I certainly learned a lot, and I am very fascinated to see how the launch of Trustless Business goes. And until, you know, our next conversation, which is hopefully when it's underway and there's a few system upgrades that you're free to share, we will chat again then.
Thank you. Thank you, Marissa. It's been great talking to you.